Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Meet the Candidates. I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. Joining me on the show today is a candidate running for the Republican nomination for the state representative seat, and it's Craig Valdez. Craig, thanks for joining us today on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. A very important time.
All right. We have a lot of issues and topics we want to get through today, but first off, we want to find out more about you, so tell us about yourself.
Okay, I went to school, UCLA, and I also am a real estate broker. I'm also a owner of a community service organization. I have a notary as well as a SafeServe license. I'm a parent of two great children, a boy and a girl.
Great. We've talked previously, and so tell me about your involvement there. I know you're very active in nonprofit work.
Yes, I am, and I'm very proud to say. How it happened was that back in 2010, when my father passed away, I wanted to do something that would honor his legacy. He's a World War II veteran. And not only in terms of veterans, but I noticed that there's also a lot of poverty in the town of Brockton where the building was located. What I found was is that I had to find a way in which I could tackle one of the social issues, one of which was food. There were many other issues as well, bikes, books, clothing. And I chose food because that's the most important essential of all population segments. So what I decided to do was work with a big box stores, seeing how I could connect them with the people of need. And I found out that the food pantries were the very first and most important source. By connecting them together, I was able to be able to deliver a lot of food. We're talking several boxes per week to all the different food pantries, everywhere from the Norfolk County of Needham all the way down to the Cape and expanding. I've been doing this for quite a few months now, and it's a new project that I had started, and I'm very proud to say it's been a very big success. It's really nice for two reasons. One is when I could see a lot of the boxes being consumed by the stores, or I should say the food pantries, and also being consumed by the soup kitchens and the senior centers, it's very gratifying to see the smile on their face. There's not a single penny that can replace the smiles and gratitude that I get from both places.
Okay. Is there a name for it?
It's the name of my company is called Commonwealth Community Center. Okay. And now it's called Commonwealth Community Services because it's pretty much a service-oriented based company. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm all about. It's all about servicing on a community level and hopefully, if elected, on a state level as well.
Great. So let's get into why you're here today. So why are you running and why this seat?
Okay. This seat's because it's exactly what the word says. It's a representative. I want to represent the people and I have a very strong passion for helping the people. I've been always very passionate about helping ever since I was a child, where I was in Boy Scouts, was in parochial school doing volunteer projects, where I was studying the field of psychology, as well as graduate, by the way, in psychology. I also have worked with clinics and helping them being able to resolve certain issues on a helpline basis, which is a telephone crisis counseling. Okay. I also want to be able to take all these experiences with the fact that I'm a real estate broker, so I would be able to negotiate on both sides of the fence, which I'm very good at. So it will be a negotiation for the benefit of the client, in this case, the buyer or seller. What I would like to do is take these issues and take it to the state. So when we go across the aisle and work with the people on the Democratic side or the Republican side, I'll be the man to be able to do that.
Great. So this district, the 4th Plymouth District, is made up of Marshfield and most of Scituate. So in your opinion, what's the number one issue facing the district? And if elected, what would you do to work on it?
Absolutely. Scituate has six districts. I'll be involved with every district, 1 through 6, with the exception of number 3, which is north, is the north
right.
Scituate. And north Scituate also involved with Hull is
right.
part of their campaign. There are 7 wards in Marshfield. What my number one point of both districts, when I represent both, is to work on the coastal resilience. Now, when I hear the word coastal resilience, the first thing I think of is seawall. But it goes
right.
way beyond that, because Marshfield and Scituate has very rich coastlines. They have a bustling city on the coast, but they also have, which people don't talk about, is great harbors and great beaches. So what I would like to do is be able to do legislation to make sure that the seawalls are actually fortified enough that we surpass the 100-year storm or the 3 nor'easters that we had mm-hmm. last March. And I know that personally is because I own 2 beach homes right on Sand Hills in Scituate. I deal with, as a resident, on a daily basis, all the rocks that come across the seawall, all the debris that comes across the seawall, and having to wonder what's going to happen. Will DPW help us, or will we be able to help ourselves? What I found is that the neighbors helping each other, it's kind of my philosophy in my nonprofit company, has been wonderful. But we also need help from the state too, because it's a massive project. If we can make the city vibrant, we will have a growing economy. And if we have a growing economy, we'll have a sustainable city. My goal as a representative is seeing what we could do to make sure that Scituate and Marshall becomes a model city for the other cities too. Because we have rich coastlines and we want to protect that for our generations to come.
Great. The previous holder of the seat was there for, I think, about 9.5 years, which says to someone that they were doing a good job, people were happy. So what's one thing that you would continue that the previous rep did and one thing that you might change or look at differently?
Sure. One thing that I've noticed when I was on the campaign trail, and by the way, I had spoken to over 2,000 people to get my 702 certified signatures,
wow,
which is more than required.
Yeah, definitely.
However, I did that because it's my level of passion and my level of intensity to be able to get the job done. However, the most important thing I've noticed is that Mr. Kent was well respected. He was always available and he was visible. He was always willing to listen to the other with everybody, whether it's Democrat or Republican.
Right.
He didn't really care about that. He cared about residential issues, which is exactly what I embrace. I want to take over, or I should say, I want to carry the baton from what he's done, and I want to be able to further his agenda. One of the agenda, which is currently in the House right now, which is impressive, is the fact that he's working with the opioid crisis,
yeah,
with Denise Garlick, which is also a Democrat representative, but only representing Needham in Norfolk County. What they decided and what they plan to do, I should say, is that they're going to have 3 cells of a jail to be able to use as a treatment center for when the people are leaving their sentence and going on the streets again, they will be able to have some type of form of treatment. The biggest problem you'll notice in the Boston Globe is that many people are not able to be treated with medication called Suboxone,
right,
or Mexitrexone. And with those two not being used, they don't have a high tolerance. So because their tolerance is so low, then what happens when they come back and they have the same chemical dependency, mm-hmm, as what opioids do, the problem is then they end up having a high risk of death.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some studies in 2010 that over 15,000 people have died on opioids alone.
Yeah.
And 58,000, I believe the number is, have overdoses based upon prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And prescription drugs is not specifically opioid, because they ask,
yeah,
what is it? It's actually fentanyl, codeine, which is very common in cough medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's OxyContin, which is very commonly prescribed for sports injuries.
Yeah.
It's things like that. If we could curb those problems and then we will be able to take care of the problems outside. But that piece is very, very important,
right,
that I would like to continue since Mr. Cantwell will not be in office at the time.
Yeah.
But one thing that I would like to change, if possible, is being able to have what I call caucus meetings, or having a smaller precinct-type meetings. In Scituate, we have what they call precincts, and in Marshfield, it's called wards. There's 7 wards in Marshfield, and there's 6 wards or precincts in Scituate.
Right.
The state of Massachusetts legislated, unless we change the law, I should say, the state of Massachusetts says we cannot have individual meetings. In other words, we can't have ward meetings,
really,
and not have town meetings. So by the bylaws of the city, or I should say the bylaws of the town and the mandate of the state, we have to have, or they have right now, town meetings.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, just one town meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. The problem is that I believe that not one shoe fits all. So people who have issues on the coastline may have different needs and issues that are further west,
yeah,
of us, if you will. So I'm trying to find a way to be able to have that problem. Having availability is one thing, but having ability to reach the people is another.
Right.
So what I would do is have subcommittees that would go out, and they would have kind of like delegates, if you will,
yeah,
to come, mm-hmm, and report to the general meeting itself. Because there's 19,000 people, households, in Marshfield alone. And we know in the town meetings in Marshall, for example, they don't show up at the meetings. The reason being is because they have lives. They have children to feed. They have homework. They have all kinds of life. And then right now, we even have vacations. So to be able to reach out to them is very difficult. Okay. We want all the voices to be heard. And hopefully, we could do that through these subcommittee meetings.
Okay. Great. One of the biggest issues that the South Shore is facing is aging population. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, the South Shore Chamber of Commerce did a 2030 kind of vision of the South Shore, where they looked at, you know, issues and things they needed to address. And the biggest thing was that it's an aging population.
Right.
So we need to work to attract younger people, get businesses to the area. So what would you do to kind of reverse that aging trend?
Well, I had spoken to the Council of Aging in Marshfield and Scituate. What I found that the current aging population or elderly population is approximately 28% for the given population itself.
Okay.
They did a study in 2030 that the aging population will be 38%. Now, the thing is that's still not a really big number in terms of having 50% aging population, let's say like in Florida or some other places like that. However, I believe that we should take care of our aging population.
Okay.
The reason being is that they're a very big part of our history, a very rich history. They brought up our kids. They shaped our future, or I should say, shaped our past, which will shape our future. So we really need to have them. If we could get the younger people involved, they will actually have jobs because they will be helping the aging population with home care, driving, which is important, the transportation piece, and other types of needs that the aging population will need. What we could also do to attract the younger population is create a more vibrant center, whether it's sports activity type centers, whether it's world-class beaches, if you will, mm-hmm. or other things that we could go ahead and put on the coastline and lower the tax base itself. So we could have the best of both worlds, and to displace any one of them because the dollar doesn't stretch for the elder population or because of the fact that they can't afford it would be a travesty.
Right.
So I would hope to see what we could do to work with both of them. And that's where the Chapter 40B comes into play in low-cost housing, because we could take care of them. It's not so much of disabled veterans. It's not so much of the aging population or the elderly veterans, but it's that we can help everybody. We could all enjoy this beautiful town, and we should not have to displace anybody.
You actually just kind of jumped into my next subject, which is affordable housing, which is great. Yeah. Great job on the segue.
Thank you.
You've talked about affordable housing and the need for it. Give me your definition of affordable housing. It's one of those things that doesn't have a distinct definition. And how do we create more affordability?
Oh, absolutely. Affordable housing was established by the government. It's called Chapter 40B.
Right.
And it was established in 1969. And the whole purpose of it was to ease the regulations, have the building permits eased, as well as zoning restrictions ease as well, so that we could be able to have a high density housing at low cost and of safe housing for individuals that qualify. Now, we don't have to wipe out coastal regions, which a lot of people fear of. We don't have to wipe out the middle of the city and say, oh my gosh, our city is turning into a big aging, low-income population, which drags the real estate down.
Right.
That's not true. As a real estate broker, I know for a fact that you could actually develop low-cost housing and not impact the infrastructure of the city itself. How they do that, basically, is they will take certain sections of the town that they could build multi-units. And the average is 55 units per section. By the way, in 2012, when they did an election to see whether or not that low-income housing would be approved in the city or not, overwhelmingly, the state and everybody that's been electing it in the ballots have actually approved to having more low-income housing. In fact, there's a mandate in the state of Mass that 10% of all given population must be low-income housing. Okay. So I totally want to champion that. And I think that that's very, very important.
Yeah. You mentioned 40B, and it's something that I feel like I talk with a lot of people running on many levels, it's selectmen to state reps, and sometimes it's a dirty word, it's a dirty phrase. Do you think 40B is going well? Do you think it's something that might need to be revised a little bit? I've heard many different things, from it's great, keep it going, to it needs to be abolished, to we need to modify it a little bit.
Yeah, you know, as a real estate broker, I could give you a real estate point of view, but as a resident, most importantly, I'm going to give you another point of view too. And hopefully together, there will be a hybrid of what really works. On a real estate point of view, I think it's a great idea, and I think we need it because we do have an aging population. That won't go away. In fact, we are probably part of the baby boom, which is going to be the next wave of the aging population. If we don't act fast, act aggressively, and work with the population that we have now, we're not going to be ready for the bigger wave that's going to happen in 10 years. So we'll be doing ourselves a disservice. So what we're doing is we're really investing in the future. Now, there will be some people, when I say people, I'm saying developers, they could misuse the regulations of 40B by making by saying that they're applying for low-cost housing, but actually developing high-rise places with low restrictions.
Yeah.
Now, that's a problem. As a state rep, what I would do, I would go over the current regulations and make it more current if need be, so that we would be able to be in step with the future itself, because it shouldn't work that way. It should be a plus and a win-win for both the economy, but also for the citizens of Marshfield and Scituate.
Great. I want to get into some other topics here. One item that you've talked about is reducing the local homelessness population.
Yeah.
A lot of people sometimes don't think of that as an issue in the district. So how would you work at the State House to reduce that?
Okay, sure, absolutely. First of all, homelessness is not specifically a Marshfield-specific or a Scituate-specific issue. The reason being is because Scituate Marshall has a very strong familiar or family support system. If you have a very strong social and a family support system in place, you're not going to see the effects of true homelessness, because the definition of homelessness is a person without a home, therefore living on the streets. I mean, that's the classic definition. Mm-hmm. But there are people that, believe it or not, live in cars or live with other relatives. So that could be construed as another form of homelessness. Because to me, homelessness is a person that does not have independent living, per se, to be able to sustain themselves. So what I would want to do to curb that is, and by the way, as a state representative, is I would work with all the other towns that do have specific problems of homelessness and how we could resolve that. Another thing, too, is that in Marshfield, because I identify and I understand the problem, they have a place called Carolina House, which is in Marshfield. And the fact is when I spoke to them, they said that there's not Marshfield residents, per se, but they work with all the towns surrounding us. So we're a good steward to be able to help our fellow cities.
Help my neighbor.
Exactly. And as a state rep, I'm going to be doing the same thing, because I'm going to be one of the 52 on Beacon Hill to be able to vote on situations that may apply or not, or possibly affect our own district itself.
Okay. Another topic that you mentioned in the past is veteran services. You want to improve veteran services. What are some services that veterans should be getting but currently aren't?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny that you mentioned it, because I was over at the Marshfield DA just yesterday itself, and they had a membership drive. And I'm proud to say that I'm going to be a member of the Sons of the Veterans, which I'm very proud of, because it helps carry the legacy of my father, who passed away in 2010, who is a World War II veteran. By keeping his memory alive makes it all worth it to me. It's the most important thing why I'm doing everything that I'm doing as we speak. But regardless of the veterans itself, the first thing I've noticed is that they've always talked about the classic long lines, not enough services, and the services they get are not good enough, for lack of better ways of saying it. We're talking federal, state, and local level. So what I would want to do is champion with all the different service organizations of how we could do a better job. Work with all the commanders of all the different areas and say, where are we at and where will we need to be, so that we could go ahead and take care of these problems itself. It's really sad when someone had told me yesterday that when you enlist in the service, you raise your right arm hand and you say, yes, I'm willing to give my honor and my life and my time to the service. Then you're told a lot of rules that you're not familiar with and probably don't understand, but you're forced to learn them. You go there for 2, 4, 7 years of employment. Mm-hmm. And then when you're honorably discharged, you come back hopefully in whole, but sometimes not, mentally or physically. Mm-hmm. And I know both, because my father, when he came back from the service, he lost his hearing. When my uncle came back, he was a PTSD classic patient. And back in the 60s, PTSD wasn't quite well understood. but I lived with him as a teenager and knew exactly what the day in and day out problems and causes and better yet, the challenges are for a PTSD patient. But when you come out, then they ask the basic question, what do I do with my life? So they start having a lot of challenges that are not really addressed by the VA, from what I've been told. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they start getting frustrated. They lose hope. And they get to the point where they give up, mm-hmm. which is sad. If they don't have a strong support system, that's where they start going into other avenues, which are not the way we want, which is alcoholism, drugs, homelessness, and the list goes on. So if we don't invest in our veterans, we're going to end up having to invest in the social services, which is a lot more expensive. Right. So that's why I want to tackle that problem with the veterans. It's a very big problem. I think the wait line is a problem. I think low-cost prescription is something that has to be done, for sure. Okay.
What is food stability?
Food stability is my passion because I started this program just a few months ago, right before I started my candidacy for state rep. Mm-hmm. I said to myself, and I always like, by the way, looking at a problem, researching it, thinking about it, researching it, and then putting it together. Mm-hmm. What I did is I was going around to the different stores. I was seeing people throwing away food at the different big box stores, whether it's Safeway and many other places. And I always asked the clerk, I said, what do they do with the food? He says, well, we can't sell it. It's not sellable, so we have to throw it away. And I'm looking at the expiration dates. I'm looking at the different things. I said, I can't believe this. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this apple. Yeah. I mean, I would never go in the trash or whatever. But yeah. I said, oh, my gosh. It's like, what? I said, this is something's wrong with that. So I went to a couple of the stores, the store managers. I introduced myself. And because of the fact I have a 501c nonprofit company, I introduced myself as an owner, which I am, of the nonprofit company. I said, I would like to know what I can do to help you out so we could not have to throw food away. So there's a chalkboard that shows how much poundage that they donate.
Really?
And so a light bulb went out in my head. I said, oh my gosh, I'm a nonprofit company. They donate food. Yeah. How about if I could connect the dots together and take this food and bring it to where it would be really helpful, which is the food pantries, the churches, and soup kitchens, and so forth and so on. So what happens is, because I'm kind of like a small fish in the whole scope of things, there's much bigger companies that mm-hmm. deal with this stuff. They said, I'll give you a try. So I was grateful. I was there on the spot. They gave me 30 boxes of food. They said, okay, if you could come here at a certain time, at a certain day, we'll try you out and we'll let you do it on a regular basis. If our bigger companies can't come when it's snowing or when it's a Memorial Day or holidays in general, then we'll use you. Absolutely, no problem. Rain or shine, 7 days a week, rain. Yeah. I mean, it's to say, or night, I'll be there. So it was a trial basis. I did it. I got 30 boxes. Then another store gave me 30 boxes. Then another store gave me another 30 boxes. And I was overwhelmed with so many boxes of food. And we're talking wonderful lettuce and fruits and vegetables and everything perishable, dairy products, breads, unbelievable amount of breads and cheeses and milk and so forth. And the beauty of it was is I started making phone calls. I call every single food pantry and say, hi, my name is Craig Valdez. I'm the owner of Commonwealth Community Services, and I have a lot of food that I'd like to know if your food pantry would like to use. And they said, we'd love to have that. Come right over. Mm-hmm. So I give them my brochure, I give them my 501c slip, and just to introduce myself so I'm not some guy off the street, if you will.
Yeah.
And they went ahead and they took it. They liked it. And I went there when the shoppers were coming, and sure enough, everybody was filling their baskets. And the owner, I should say, the manager of the food pantry, both Marshfield, Scituate, and all up and down Norfolk County and Plymouth County said, thank you so much for your food. And just last, Council of Aging in Needham told me, or there's an article that's saying that school's out. This was the headlines of the Needham Times. School's out, but we may not have enough food to stock our shelves. That really broke my heart. I said, you know what? I need more food. I got to help these people. What I'm really excited about is when I could see not only the smiles on the residents, the senior residents, when they're eating the food from the kitchens, but when the stock shelves are full, so when people are shopping, they actually are getting food and they're filling their families. Mm-hmm. Because the way I look at it is this, if we don't give food to the children, and if they don't eat, they're not going to study. or they're not going to learn anything at all. If we don't feed the adults, they're not going to actually be able to have hope. Yeah. And if we don't feed the seniors, they're not going to survive.
Right.
So food is extremely passionate to me.
Right. We have a few minutes left, so I want to kind of do a little rapid fire here. So you've been out campaigning. What's the one thing you're hearing or you're hearing from constituents?
Three things. Number one thing is our roads need repair. We have too many taxes, and we don't have recreational places for us to do other things besides go to the beach. Mm-hmm. And the beach are basically owned by, in a way, indirectly by the residents because it's their private property. So I went to a trails meeting in Marshfield, and they went ahead and they're opening up a trail, one of which is called the Cordova Trail. It's a gigantic piece of real estate where they're actually putting trail markers for hikers.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we need to do. We need to develop the riches and the wealth that we have. For example, we also have North River. North River is another place where we could definitely use.
Okay.
It's wonderful.
All right. What's something about you that people may find interesting?
That I'm a very passionate listener, and I'm just very passionate about helping.
Okay.
That's all I'm about is helping.
If we were to steal your iPhone or iPod, what music would we find on it?
Hawaiian music, surprisingly, because I spent 4 years in Hawaii before I moved to Boston.
Nice.
And I love Hawaiian music. It's just so soothing. But I also like R&B, easy listening music. And I was a closet dancer many years ago. So I love electronica music. Anything with a disco beat, that kind of a thing like
that. If someone wants to find out more about you, where can they go?
They could go onto my Facebook page. They would just have to type in my name, Craig Valdez, that's all. You'll see some pictures, you'll see some bio, you'll see what I'm into and some of the things I've had written on that Facebook page. Right. But if they want to directly get a hold of me, which I would really prefer, they could go on my email, which is commonwealth007@yahoo.com.
Okay. And finally, why are you the best candidate for this position?
Well, I think that my experiences, my education, and my passion to help has been demonstrated by what I've done through all my life, but even more concentrated what I've done while I was on the campaign trail. Each day goes by, I get more invigorated of why I am going to be and hope to be the next state representative because I can't wait to help and make changes and be there for everybody.
Great. Well, Craig, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And that's all the time we have for Meet the Candidates. And until next time, make it a great day.